We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an announcement heard at Essex County Cricket Club, read by Neil Sleet.
The players will be doing an autograph session after the game, so why not come along to the pavilion to get your bits signed?
Our thanks to Tom Ruffin for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Mark Steele and Angela Barnes. And opposite them, on my left, Helen Lewis and Simon Evans. So, Mark, who has an African-do attitude?
Well, this really is a story about the decline of British rulers over the last 200 years or so. Because in about 1800, our rulers used to go to Africa and say, all these raw materials and minerals all belong to us. We own all of this now. And that was it. And now we go over there and their rulers say to us, yeah, you want us to trade with you? We might help you out, but first you've got to dance, bitch. Is that the right answer?
Yeah.
I think she was lucky. I think Theresa May was lucky that the president of South Africa, he could have been much harder on her. He could have said, I'm afraid we've lost all your documents and therefore we're deporting you back to where you came from, even though we never gave you the documents in the first place because we're setting up a hostile environment, and she'd have just had to get back on the plane. And all of this is because of Brexit. So she's got to go, yes, I know that we now no longer looks like we're going to be able to trade with, like, 35% of the world's economy that is Europe, but we are going to be able to beg South Africa whether they can buy. She'd have been better off going, no, we might not be able to deal with Europe, but I've got a toaster for sale, 10 quid. These two records, the charity shop wouldn't have them. Go on, Mr. Ramaphosa, 2 quid, they're yours. It's...
Angela.
You can't help feeling that she just seems really awkward and out of place on these foreign trade missions. Like, she just doesn't seem comfortable with any of it. It's like sending Miss Marple to be part of the Avengers. Like, she just... and the whole dancing thing, it almost made me feel sorry for her, because, you know, people say, oh, you should always just dance like no one's watching, but everyone was watching. And it's just, and I can sing, but I can't dance, you know, and to put her... or to be in that position where... Like, when I dance, it's so bad that a circle will form around me on the dance floor, but not to watch, it's to protect my dignity.
Really? I do have sympathy for that. I mean, you're just told, if you're not choreographed or whatever, you're just told, just dance. So whenever I dance, I always feel like sort of the passenger in a vehicle that's been stolen or something. I think, someone's going to stop this, but it's not going to be me. Do you know what I mean?
That's what I'm kind of intrigued by, Angela, this idea that she looks really awkward on trade missions. Have you found the place that Theresa May doesn't look awkward?
That's a very good point.
She looks awkward on her own sofa in her own house, like she's like she's burgled it or something like that. I think it's been a nice trip as well, because it's allowed a variety of African leaders to kind of neg us, which I think they are long overdue for. Did you see that Kenyatta, the Kenyan president, ostentatiously forgot Boris Johnson's name? He called him the bicycle guy.
Well, of course, maybe he was at school with him and that was his nickname then. Yeah. Because he had a bicycle. It's perfectly reasonable.
I think it's vaguely absurd. I tend to agree with Mark, you know, that we visit ex-colonial properties and try and conduct... It's a bit like, you know, when you've looted a premises and then you go back and ask the owner if they'd like to buy a DVD player. It doesn't seem like...
I love the one where that now they're admitting that there's going to be, like, constant 13-mile traffic jams in Kent because of the lorries, because the customs going to be held up and all that, 2,000 lorries at a time. And I think that's a good thing, because most of Kent voted for Brexit on the grounds that they were fed up of immigrants, and now the population of Kent is going to be 43 million, of which 42 million will be Romanian truck drivers on a ring road round Maidstone. I think...
And anyone aware of any other unusual experiences people have had in Africa in the last week? Any at all from the world of sport? I'll tell you one. Spurs and England defender Gary Mabbott told the World this week that while he was asleep on holiday in South Africa, a rat gnawed off part of his foot.
Which part? Know that?
Probably one of the outside bits. No, I heard that story. It's a big story this week.
While he was asleep, without waking him up. Yeah. Is it time for tourniquet before it gets to work or something?
This is... I'm just, you know, don't shoot the messenger, Simon. This is I'm just telling you what it's like out there. Gary Mabbott, ladies and gentlemen. News quiz perennial.
How did that get into a question about Theresa May and colonial trade?
Because it happened in South Africa. Just a bit of local news. It was a sort of an and finally. And finally, Gary Mabbott's had part of his foot bitten off today.
Marvellous. That sounds like the conversation at 11:30 at night in a pub. I'll tell you what else about Africa. The rats gnaw your feet off. She wants to be bloody careful while she's dancing about. She'll look down a bit. She won't be able to dance next time. She'll have two toes missing and the rats will be running off with it.
This is the news that Prime Minister and slave to the rhythm Theresa May has... has gone to Africa and done a bit of a dance. This was part of a trip to seal a trade deal with six countries and make the UK the number one investor in Africa. Africa is, of course, a land of abundant natural resources, some of which we clearly missed the first time around. We've secured trade deals with six African nations, and on behalf of everyone in this godforsaken country, can I say let's hope the good people of Lesotho get through an absolute shedload of hobnobs and ground-to-air missiles. In Cape Town, May visited Nelson Mandela's empty prison cell, where she made an impassioned speech promising to track him down and bring him back to justice at all costs. 2 points to Mark. Angela, who's been behaving shellfishly?
Yeah. So this is the... Now, is it scallop or scallop? Because I'm a working-class girl. I've no idea what... Scallop, scallop?
It's got an A in it. Let's go scallop.
Scallop. OK, this is the scallop-scallop wars. when I first heard that the French were attacking us because of scallops, I assumed it was because we weren't cooking them properly. I don't know. But apparently, in the English Channel, there's been a sort of face-off between French and British vessels over scallop dredging. They got quite heated. At one point, French vessels were throwing stones and taunting the British vessels, presumably saying things like, your father was a hamster and your mother smells of elderberries, I don't know, something like that. And eventually, the British fleets retreated after about 15 minutes of stone throwing and taunting. And I believe that means that that is the biggest French military victory since Hastings. Yeah. The British are saying...
This is what the news quiz is going to be like after Brexit. It's all going to be this.
So basically what it is, the French have a policy that they're not allowed to harvest scallops until after the 1st of October because they are trying to conserve the stocks. But the British have more of a you snooze, you lose policy.
I love absolutely everything about this story. This is hands down my favourite news story of the week because it's one of those phenomenally petty things that nonetheless could lead to nuclear war. Absolutely. I saw this great quote. Barry Dees of the National Federation of Fishermen's Organisation said the deeper issues behind the clashes should be settled by talking around the table, not on the high seas where people could be hurt. 14 miles off the coast of Normandy. 14 miles.
It's absolute bandit country out there.
This is all about... Scallops.
That's right, Mark. Yeah, scallops.
Scallops. It's the most middle-class naval battle. The naval battle. Bloody Drake, the Armada. People great, the Battle of the Atlantic. Great heroism, all the longest day in these films. And this is a naval battle. I think you'll find those are ours. But no, they cannot be. What's happened to us?
Even the seas are gentrifying. That's... Yeah.
Simon, presumably you've been involved in any number of late-night disputes over bivalve mollusks.
I'm always up for a punch-up with the French, but I can't help feeling they're sort of... can't help feeling they're on the right side of the moral divide here. It's quite awkward, isn't it? Because they're trying to preserve the stocks. And also, scallops does feel like a more naturally French dish. It's an aphrodisiac, and it comes with its own ashtray. It feels like this is their turf, to be honest, isn't it?
Do you know who else has had a dispute over territory this week?
Is it
Gary Mabbutt?
It is. It's Gary Mabbutt.
Oh, Mabbutt. It's Gary Mabbutt. Yeah.
Gary Mabbutt and a rat had a dispute over who owned his foot, and it was ultimately settled in the rat's favour. This is the tale of a maritime dispute, always the best kind, between British and French fishermen over scallop fishing rights off the coast of Normandy. This is because there are different rules for British and French fishermen. British fishermen can fish for scallops all year round, whereas French fishermen can only fish for scallops if they've caught the scallops in bed with their wife and can prove that they are acting in the heat of passion. Still, I think it's important to remember that scallops are essentially fish-flavoured baby bells with ideas above their station. This sort of thing is only going to increase tensions with our European neighbours, but luckily for the UK, our one remaining viable diplomatic relationship is with Poseidon, Lord of the Deep. Still, we better hope the scallop is not fished to extinction, or else what will mermaids stick on their tits? 2 points. Helen, which salmon has been smoked out?
This must be Alex Salmond, former First Minister of Scotland, who resigned from the Scottish National Party this week because he's facing allegations of sexual harassment, which he denies. And we can't comment on any of that. It's all ongoing and it's mined and a lot of legal wrangles. But I think there is a broader point about the way that he's kind of conducted himself since then. So he set up a crowdfunder in order to take the Scottish government to court because he says they've been unfair to him. So he thinks that other people should pay his legal bills for him to sue the government because they're properly investigating a claim of sexual harassment. It's already very weird. His statement on it, I think it's about 400 words long, uses the word I 26 times, I counted. Always a bit, I mean, I think he's really struggled since leaving office, actually. The weirdest story about him that always sticks with me is he got done in 2015 because he was booking flights under the name of James T. Kirk. Do you remember this? He used to get on BA flights, and basically, it's been going on for years because he's a massive Trekkie, and he'd been getting away with it because his police protection officers, his First Minister, used to be going, he's obviously not actually James T. Kirk, he's Alex Salmond. And they'd wave him through. And then as soon as that happened and he didn't have them anymore, people were like, but you don't look at all like William Shatner.
Was he? He's had photographic ID that had a picture of William Shatner on it.
No, that's
bought
Alex
the tickets
Salmond.
In the name of James T.
Yeah,
Kirk.
Yeah, it was his cool stunt
international
alias.
International flights?
Yeah.
It was intergalactic flights.
This thing about someone like Salmond, there's this thing as well, when someone is not a leader anymore, there's a thing where they should sort of...
Go.
They should go. You know, you have that sort of reminder of when Boris Johnson became mayor of London, Ken Livingstone used to turn up to his public press conferences and sit in the front row looking sort of slightly furious. And you think that's not dignified behaviour.
Hitler.
Yeah. as it turned out, yeah. But there is a thing where you should
disappear,
shouldn't you?
He's driven by extraordinarily powerful impulses, though, isn't he, Alex Salmond, to fight upstream back to his original spawn. Overcome his nature.
It's tremendously unsavoury, but then there's also been those sort of other elements of it where some people are saying, well, this is basically a unionist plot, that MI5, they've caused this whole thing, and the evidence for this, they said that Leslie Evans, who's one of the highest civil servants in the Scottish government, they said, well, see, she could arrange it because she's married to Jonathan Evans, who's the former head of MI5. She's
not,
yeah. No. That was the only thing that was wrong with the theory. She's... Yeah.
She's married to an SNP activist, isn't she?
Yeah, but apart from that, it completely stands up.
Completely holds water, right? Yeah.
People think everything is a plot now. People think that the whole Jeremy Corbyn thing, that someone went back in time and made him say things about NATO in 2011, knowing that one day he'd be Labour leader, and you think, I wish our security services were this efficient. I just don't... That's the problem with all conspiracy theories. People can't run a government, let alone a shadow government.
It does seem an odd time as well for there to be a sort of thing that MI5 would have to get involved. It's not like... prior to these cases coming out, there was a sort of... Scotland were on the verge of suddenly achieving independence, and this is a kind of last throw of the dice. It seems a sort of ludicrously odd time to...
Well, I don't know. I think Scottish independence does sort of hang in the balance at the moment, sort of halfway between it's never going to happen and it's never, ever, ever going to happen.
Of course, you've just been up in Scotland performing, Simon.
Have,
the independence
yes.
may be closer than ever as a result
yeah.
of this.
Try and do what I can to sow discourse and divide, if I can.
Old Scotland's full of discourse and divide. They hate each other, don't yeah. they? I mean, you sort of like... I was in Orkney, which is it's beautiful, utterly beautiful place. There's hardly anybody there, a few thousand people dotted around these islands. And then even further than that, the Shetland, which is bits of which are up past Oslo and that. And they can't stand each other. I was on BBC Radio Orkney. All of it, there must have been about five people listening to this. And halfway through, out of nowhere, the presenter just said, Mark, I've got a joke for you. I said, oh, yeah, go on in. He said, how do you know that E.T. comes from Shetland? I said, I don't know. He said, he looks like he does.
Anyone know any other resignation that occurred this week?
Frank Field, the Labour MP, has resigned the whip. He's going to sit as an independent. I mean, the Labour MPs are kind of slowly peeling away. It's like watching continental drift, basically. I just think at some point there might be none of them left, but it's going to take about 300 million years.
But also, I think Gary Mabbutt resigned as a midfielder for an African football team.
Well, he is resigned to going through life with part of his foot missing. after it was eaten by a rat. In South Africa, apparently. This is the resignation of Alex Salmond from the Scottish National Party. Who knows if he's gone for good? It may be that he'll rise again like a Caledonian Jesus, emerging after 3 days from the surface of a loch to lead his followers once more to what he claims is the promised land, but on closer inspection turns out to still be Dunfermline. Scottish Labour MSP Rhoda Grant accused Salmond of dragging Scotland into the gutter. On behalf of England, can I say how nice it is to have company? It's a sad way to bring down the curtain on a 45-year career that I think it's fair to say on several occasions teetered on the brink of achievement. Salmond still hosts a chat show on Russia Today. It's a bit like Lorraine, but with a nicer sofa and a somewhat less oppressive atmosphere. It's also very slightly less pro-Russia. Two points to Helen. Simon, I mean, what's Donald Trump done now? sort of run out of kind of just weird sort of, you know, things that you'd say. What's he done? What's Donald Trump done this time?
Donald Trump. I'm brought onto this show to defend Donald Trump.
You were brought on for a completely different reason, Simon. That's just how you choose to behave.
Okay. The latest Donald Trump outrage is that he is convinced that Silicon Valley is out to get him. And that is not the pseudonym of another porn star, incidentally. Silicon Valley. Though it would work, wouldn't it? Very nicely. I seem to remember, I think if I get it right, Donald Trump's complaint is that when he Googles his own name, which it's hard to imagine him doing something quite so vainglorious, but I bet... You have to take him at his word. When he Googles his own name, he finds that the news sources and the stories and so on, which tend to be most visible on the Google search page, tend to be those from the left-leaning sources such as MSNB and CNN and so on, who don't like him and tend to come up with scurrilous rumours about him and so on. And he thinks that Google itself is biased against him, basically, which is a fairly Nietzschean level of enemy to take on, just somewhere between the sea and God himself. But... He thinks that Google is biased. I have to say, I was dubious, and so I Googled it, and Google said it isn't. So, I don't know. I do have suspicions that some of the social media platforms are showing certain biases, and I don't like it. I feel a bit uncomfortable about it. I have actually deactivated my Twitter account. If I have anything to say now, I'll write it on a postcard and pop it in the newsagent window. And I have actually found that a very calming influence. Sometimes the vicar reposts it on the church notice board, and that's it.
I've noticed that since Twitter's been a thing, toilet walls are rubbish.
Yeah.
It used to be terrific.
I mean, Donald Trump on Twitter is a... Do you know, I'd love to know what Tom from MySpace is. Do you remember Tom from MySpace? Mm. Like, MySpace was the first social media platform. You know, Tom invented it, and he was your first friend when you joined it. And he's been very quiet of late, and I think he's just in a cave looking at Donald Trump's Twitter timeline going, I didn't mean this to happen. I just wanted a way of talking to girls without actually talking to girls, you know. Zuckerberg, Tim Berners-Lee are in a WhatsApp group together called What the Hell Have We Done? Yeah.
How else has he upset people this week, Trump?
Ooh,
I don't know. Other than upsetting himself.
Mexican trade deal, then Canada...
Well, Senator McCain...
Sorry?
He wasn't very quick to respond to the death of Senator McCain.
Yes, wouldn't lower the flag or something. It was like Diana all over again, wasn't it? Yeah.
He took a while to put that thing go, and then he was going up and down.
They were not pals of each other, were they? Trump famously said he didn't think McCain was a proper war hero. He likes the ones that don't get caught. So if he's willing to say that when he's still alive, I think probably not lowering the flag is a relatively minor misdemeanor. You know, I'm not lowering my flag for this individual. We didn't like each other in life. I'm in charge of this house now. I get to say who goes up and down the flagpole. And again, we're back to Stormy Daniels. But
These are Donald Trump's claims that Google News is biased against him and that liberal news is ranked above conservative news in search engine results. Trump has accused Google search results of being rigged to make him look bad. I could say the same about Google Images, whose search results show me to be a slightly careworn man in early middle age instead of the svelte sexual panther I know myself to be in. No lying algorithm, filthy fake news mirror or shill of a wife are going to tell me otherwise. Google has claimed that it has no political agenda and has reasserted that it is a noble and scientific endeavour dedicated only to collating all of our personal data for its own financial gain. If Trump feels disappointed by his Google results, he should try being in a children's television show 14 years ago. Still, it brightens up the odd taxi ride. Yes, that's right. Does this window shut? 2 points. To Simon. And at the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Angela have 4, and so too to Helen and Simon. We start round two with an extract from a newsletter in Rushton, Northamptonshire.
It's been reported that someone has smeared dog excrement on the bottom of the children's slide in Rushton Park. A council spokesman said, "I can't believe someone could stoop so low as to do this."
Our thanks to Colin Ivins for sending us that. Angela, who won't have the energy to protest?
So this is that the government wants to introduce a ban on energy drinks being sold to under 18s as part of their campaign, you know, to combat childhood obesity because they're full of sugar, these drinks, and caffeine. And I understand the childhood obesity crisis is a thing we need to address. You know, you go into Clinton Cards now and you can buy balloons that say type 2 today. I mean, I don't know who has been giving Red Bull to their children. Speaking as a non-mother, I don't understand why you do anything that makes children more annoying. Like, really ever walked into a primary school and said, what these children need is a bit of a pick-me-up. And, of course, banning it, I'm not sure that's the answer, because when you ban something, kids just want it more. But, yeah, they want to ban under-18s from buying them, which is a shame because, you know, that means they'll go straight when they're over 18 to Jaeger bombs without any preparation.
But they put vodka in them, don't they? That is a thing.
No, yeah, they do vodka Red Bull, but Jaeger bomb is like a shot of Jägermeister dropped into a Red Bull, like a sort of Müller fruit corner, but really... A Jaeger bomb, I look a bit like a Müller fruit corner because I go really white and one eye bleeds.
That's right. Yeah, it's probably because if it's used responsibly, that's right. Red Bull, it's really a mixer, isn't it? That's that's the point. Can you see any downsides to this, Mark?
Red Bull. I don't know. No, I've seen my son. He drinks all this stuff, and it's all part. And he's all super healthy and stuff, and does Thai boxing and all that sort of carry on. But I've just. I don't know.
Does he ever sleep and things like that?
I don't know what happens. I've no idea. I've no idea. I tried so hard to keep.
You ever thought
up
of writing a book about parenting?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. These are bad things. I'm amazed that they were ever considered good things. You know, it's like suddenly, cheesy what's-its. They're a good wholesome Sunday dinner. You know. No, they're clearly wrong. These things are mad, aren't they? They're just... I'm not saying ban them, but, you know, we ought to ban them.
All right, so we've heard the science.
But Angela's exactly right. If you ban them, it will make children want them more. There's a great thing that the Obamas did where Barack Obama said, we've told our daughters that they can have a tattoo if they want, but my wife and I will get the exact same tattoo in the exact same place. So what they should do with energy drinks is basically just give one to Liam Fox and then everyone will go, don't want it anymore.
Quite overexcited.
Quite a transitional age, but they already seem to treat the place like a hotel, so I have installed a minibar in their rooms and that's charged directly to their savings accounts. And have to say, on the energy drink front, the great thing is that drives a lot of further drinking, generally speaking. Once they, you know, you put those in, and then that kind of opens up the rest of the you know, and they get through the nuts and everything that night, as a rule. So,
that's where you make your money, isn't it?
It's yeah, not the exactly. Miniatures, it's the nuts. They're a bit of a loss leader, really, the energy drinks, but they.
This is a government proposal to ban the sale of energy drinks to children in England. They say this will bring health benefits, but what about the teenagers in my street who'll now be drinking their vodka unmixed? The thing is, a responsible parent will find the right balance. A couple of Red Bulls to get them going in the morning, then phase in the Horlicks to ensure a decent night's sleep, plus the customary tankard of creme de menthe for special occasions. Happy 7th birthday, Toby, you lunatic. A 500 milliliter can of energy drink is equivalent to 20 sugar cubes and takes considerably less time to feed to a horse.
Can you give them before a race? Can you give them, like, a gallon of Red Bull before a race? Is that illegal?
Almost certainly, yeah. But if you disapprove of that sort of thing, obviously you can give them ecstasy, Mark.
It would make more sense, because you know how, like, Frankie Dettori got done, didn't he, for doing cocaine? And I always thought, wouldn't it make more sense to drug the horse?
Yeah.
Unless you're going to carry that thing to the finishing line.
Poor horse.
I tell you, if you have got a horse that's on Red Bull and a rider on Red Bull, you know what you end up with, don't you? Dressage.
A horse on cocaine getting its prize and that.
You ever tried to get a horse into a toilet cubicle, Mark? You can't do it.
This is it's good. It's such an inside. Yeah.
It's like Attenborough, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Here we see the drug taking of the Serengeti, the leopard with its MDMA.
2 points to Angela. Helen, have a listen to this.
Animals are my friends and I treat them right. I spare their lives eating veggies and rice. That's why I don't eat meat, I don't eat flesh. I'm trying to do my very best.
Well, he sounds unbearable. Helen, who has...
You should do the Radio 1 breakfast. No, that was something or other. Total shit, if you ask me. There's some more cacophony of absolute bilge, and hopefully there'll be something catastrophic that's happened in the news, and that'll keep it going for a little bit longer so we have to listen to all this absolutely ridiculous so-called music. What Rihanna's done, what, I don't care.
Just listen to that music, like Radio 1.
Not quite Kendrick Lamar, was it?
Helen, who has beef with their buddies?
Oh, this is quite a sad story this week. I think it was Southampton University did a research project into men who wanted to become vegetarian. They wanted to give up meat, but they were worried that their friends would ostracise them if they didn't eat meat because it was kind of manly. It's not really... I mean, we talk about masculinity all the time as if it's this kind of about strength and virility, but actually I think one of the really worst things about men, is, you know, or being a man, is about feeling judged all the time. There's this really great statistic where they ask people what they think of a minister. I think it's named Stuart Lewis. How do you think Minister Stuart Lewis has been doing in government? And every time, twice as many men as women will say something, they have a firm opinion on Stuart Lewis. And he doesn't exist. But then, so that what happens now is that apparently men are going over the top the other way, and they're becoming like they're having on extreme diets. So they're becoming, and I really apologise for saying this word out loud, Hegans. Yeah, it made me kind of upset. The last time a word made me that upset was when they talked about men wearing really deep shirts and they called it heavage. Just really quite unpleasant. So yeah, I think it's a very, very sad story. I think more men should, you know, embrace a salad, treat themselves, you know, pickle a walnut, live a little.
It badly. You just ask for your couscous rare.
Yeah. I saw this story because I went to Southampton University, and there was a sample size of 20, which I have to say is probably not enough to, you know, change legislation on the strength of or whatever. But a I don't know, it just didn't ring true to me. There's this fellow who said he played rugby with his mates and then they go to the pub and he felt embarrassed to not join them in a bacon sandwich. And I just, I mean, I, from what I remember playing rugby at university and then you go to the pub, I mean, to order a sausage and then to lovingly tease its shaft with the tip of your tongue while holding eye contact with the prop forward and for taking its full length into your throat. I mean, that was considered, if anything, more socially provocative than a cheese sandwich. You know, so the whole thing just didn't ring true to me in that respect, you know.
And that was today's thought for the day.
Patronising to men to say, you know, I mean, it's toxic masculinity that they're ashamed to not order the meat option on a menu. So let's make it easier for them. Let's, you know, tell people that corn is actually a big game animal. And, you know, or instead of mung beans, have well-hung beans.
But they can say it's social or societal pressure making them eat meat, but it could just as easily be the lovely smell.
It could be. You know, the only time I ever it bothers me about dining with somebody who's vegetarian is if we're having tapas, because then I've got a share in those eight dishes of disappointment. But if you're ordering your own food, do what you like. Do you know what I mean?
They do try and overcome that, though, don't they? By always forming vegetable matter into what are clearly meat shapes. These absurd, you know, you get like vegetarian sausages. You never get meat cabbages, do you? Do you know that? It is prime cut of beef, but we've made it look like this pointlessly flatulent root. The absurdity is inherent. Everyone knows animals have sausages and vegetables don't, you know. So where do they think these sausages have come from?
When I was at university, there was a vegetarian restaurant, and that their thing was making stuff really look like meat, even if it was made out of sort of corn or whatever it might be. So you could order something that, you know, once you've got sort of hoisin sauce on something, it might as well be duck, and it was sort of dappled. So it looked, and it was all everything they did. You'd order it, really looked like it was a meat dish, but it was a vegetarian dish, and it was sort of very realistic. And a few years later, I said to someone, "Oh, there was a vegetarian. Let's go to this restaurant. It's really incredible. I went before, and there was a thing that looked like duck and it tasted like duck, but it wasn't duck." Anyway, we went, had a nice meal. I said, "Isn't it amazing?" And as we were leaving, I realised that they changed owners, and it was no longer a vegetarian restaurant. So I was saying, you know, it's really like chicken, isn't it? It's really like they've sort of made bones and stuff like that. It's really, they've just put so much effort in. Absolutely.
I think one of the saddest things you can do as well is go into the men's moisturiser aisle, where they have to do those reassuring packages that tell men it's okay to moisturise by calling it stuff like bulldog and, you know, bloke, man grease for men, manly. It just makes so sad.
I've got. I went to the barber and I was given some sort of moisturiser to use specifically on a beard, and they're like, because of course you're not moisturising the bit where the beard is, so don't worry, we've got some really good stuff, and it's called something like, you know, bastard beard or something. Like that. Kind of really, it's got a skull and crossbones, as if it's really, this will sting and everything. You've got to be an absolute maniac to put this on your face. Anyway, it really, really works a treat.
I had to, an ex-boyfriend of mine, I'm all for having separate toiletries for men, only because my ex-boyfriend started wearing Oil of Yule, and that's what my nan used to wear. I had to have a quiet word, could have to change that.
With him or your nan?
My nan, obviously, she wears bulldog now.
Who else has been unexpectedly eating meat?
Gary Mabbutt.
Gary Mabbutt. No. Rat.
The rat, that's right. The rat in South Africa who's been... and it might have been due to social pressure, we don't know. Found himself eating the fittest person in the football, but Gary Mabbutt. You're quite right. Bonus points all round. Don't give him bonus points. You're going to. God, you're a broken arrow. You're doing whatever you want. This is a Southampton University study suggesting that male vegetarians may still eat meat when out with their friends due to perceived male peer pressure. It was all different in my day. You proved your masculinity on a night out, but how many radishes you could force in? Then you'd go out for a meal.
I wish you had made eye contact with me when you said that.
There's a lot of peer pressure about meat. I've spent the best part of a decade telling the lads on the cribbage team that a halloumi is a type of small cow. We had a vegetarian in our social group once. We weren't sure about him at first, but once we'd made him force grain down the neck of a goose, we were prepared to let him play five-a-side. It seems the concept of social permission is holding us back from a lot of things. Trying the risotto, dogging, or just leaving the kids at Newmarket Services and walking away trouserless into the fens. 2 points to Helen. Simon, who had a strop over someone's top?
Oh, this was the umpire in a tennis match, I think, in the US Open. I can't remember the name of the umpire or of the tennis player, but she was a female tennis player who realised at some point that her top was on back to front, by which I mean her clothing. And...
not her head or torso.
You probably need to see an osteopath rather than a wardrobe consultant at that point. But
she's Lord, it's my vertebrae. That's not quite right, is it?
But a particularly strange, ambitious backhand, and when she recovered... she realised she had her top on back to front, and to be fair, she realised it fairly... I mean, I can go a whole day now until I realise why all the crumbs are collecting in that baggy bit at the front, because it's supposed to be a hood. But... No, anyway, so she, as subtly as she could, quite discreetly, or at least not deliberately drawing attention to herself any more than she was by playing tennis in the first place, she tried to sort of lift it off and turn it around and put it back on. And the whole thing, I think, was about 10 seconds. She was wearing a black bra, I believe. I haven't seen the footage. And the umpire was shocked and appalled by this and immediately... invoked some mid-19th century rule about ungentlewomanly conduct or something, which cost her a point. Did it? I don't know. It's not for me to say. But you know, did it cross the line? Obviously, they have technology for that. But did it cross the line? I don't think so. I have to say, you know, if the line judges started playing saxophone, you know, to enhance the brief moment of provocative nudity. But, I mean, if there's some suggestion that people might be watching tennis now out of some sort of voyeuristic instinct in the age of the internet, if you're watching tennis for the hope of the glimpse of a bit of black bra strap in the 21st century, you really need to have a word with your service provider, because...
The irony of it is, if I know anything about sport, is that if she'd forgotten her kit, she would have had to do the whole thing in her bra and pants.
You are a big tennis person.
Yeah, I love it, yeah. I was very upset in the men's tennis because my beloved Andy Murray, who I think is the most wonderful human being, was beaten. But I find myself getting very, very much identified with him. Yeah, when people... This is true. Like, the last time Murray was in a final before he got injured in Paris... I was in a pub in Somerset, and there was one other bloke in this pub watching it, London bloke. It was just weren't saying much. And then eventually it was clear Murray was going to lose. He was playing Djokovic, the Serb, who so often beats him in finals. And I said to this bloke, oh, it's clear Murray's going to lose. I said, he's going to lose, isn't he? And this bloke went, good. I said, what do you mean good? He said, good, I'm glad he's losing. I can't stand him. Makes me sick. I said, well, he says, we don't support England, does he? I said, well, nor does Djokovic. He supports Serbia, doesn't he? He goes, I don't care. He makes me sick. I'll come in here every day and watch him lose. He makes me sick. I hate him. And honestly, I said, why are you being like that, mate? And he went, well, he's miserable, isn't he?
These are the events at the US Open, where French tennis player Elise Cornet was briefly given a code violation after removing her shirt to turn it around. I've also been penalised for exposing my bra on centre court, but then I was trying to throw it at Jeremy Bates. what can I say? The heart wants what it wants. Where does this sort of thing end? Next they'll be saying you can't take your pants off in Pret. Who could forget the Wimbledon rainbreak when Sue Barker entertained the crowd by ripping the clothes off a startled Cliff Richard? sorry about that joke, Cliff. Just stick it on the end of the invoice. Two points to Simon. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Mark?
Yes, it's short and succinct. It's from Gavin Harrison, and he said he saw this advertisement received by email from a free cycle group in Brighton. Wanted, cat flap for a neighbour.
Angela?
Yeah, this is from Paul Haywood, who writes, I recently saw the following ad in a fish and chip shop in Glastonbury. Keep fit rowing machine for sale. Hardly ever used. Call this number and ask for Tubby.
Helen.
Sanjiv Seth from Gurugram near New Delhi in India saw this in the Asian Age newspaper last month. Tom Cruise was spotted with his trouser zip undone at the Tokyo premiere of his latest movie, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Simon.
This is from Jay Bester, which sounds like a made-up name to me, but I'll let it pass, in Bedfordshire. Pest Management Service, 40 years experience, fully insured, special rates for OAPs and wasps.
Thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Mark and Angela have 10, but so too do Helen and Simon. Before next week, a brief announcement. I am not going to be here for the next 6 weeks as I am away filming, so I'll be leaving the show in the hands of some guest hosts. It can't be helped. I know I'll spend every minute wishing I was here and making jokes about the Lib Dem conference. next week, Simon Evans is in the chair, and then the guest hosts for the following weeks will be Susan Kalman, Fred McCauley, Bridget Christie, Joe Brand and Lucy Porter. I hope you enjoy them, and I will be back for the last episode. So it's you next week, Simon. You looking forward to it?
Yes, very different show indeed. I've got, like...
Yeah. You know. Will it be a sort of a lecture, or will you have guests? Or...
It's currently thrashing that out with the contract people. Yeah.
Well, do enjoy it. Before we leave you, here is a sign spotted outside a summer camp at the Hunt Museum in Limerick.
Would parents of camp children please use the main entrance?
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Mark Steele, Angela Barnes, Helen Lewis and Simon Evans. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Max Davis and James Kettle, with additional material by Mike Shepherd. The producer was Beverly Tagg, and it was a BBC Studios production.